including a nationwide warranty by ASE-certified technicians. Located near the U of I campus with shuttle service available. More information is available at 367-0300.
Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour, Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Kyle Mabry's at the controls this morning. In this part of Focus 580, we will be inviting your questions about consumer electronics. And here, primarily, we're talking about audio and video. And our guest for the program is Rich Warren. He has been here before many times. He's been good enough to come here and answer questions. He writes a regular column that appears in the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette newspaper, has contributed also to other national consumer electronics publications, and he's also host of a little show called The Midnight Special that we also air here on WILL. And when he is here on the program, we give you an opportunity to call in and ask about what is, I'm sure for a lot of people, a very confusing and ever-changing world that has to do with TVs, DVDs, CDs, and so forth. Now, if you're thinking about buying something new or you have some questions about some article that you've read lately that's confusing that has something to do with particularly, as I say, consumer audio video, give us a call. And I know Rich will do his best to help you out and answer your question. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's the local number. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. And that is 800-222-9455. At any point, you got questions, you can give us a call. Thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure, David. And, you know, I just thinking I've been covering this area for 30 years now, writing about it for magazines and newspapers, and it's never been more confusing. And even though we say we like to concentrate on audio-video on this segment, audio-video has merged now so entirely into the realm of digital, which means basically computers, that even when you buy an old-fashioned stereo receiver, you're basically buying a computer in a box that happens to have an amplifier in it. Mm-hmm. It's gotten that complex. My column in the News Gazette next Monday is about the iPod, for example. And nothing has made as big an impact on the landscape since the Walkman, which was 25 years ago. And it's just amazing how everything you pick up, the cover of Sound and Vision magazine, four iPod killers, how to replace, and then the PC magazine, how to replace the batteries in your iPod. Everything, everywhere I go is iPod. People call up my radio station and ask, when's your show going to be podcast? Everything is revolving around, it's a whole new, I hate to use this word, but it's a whole new paradigm. The audio-video world has changed so dramatically in the past 5 years as to be almost unrecognizable to us old-timers. Certainly, there is still the high-end audio, which you can find at some of the local dealers, which have gorgeous speakers and wonderful amplifiers that cost a gazillion dollars, and you can sit back and listen to the most beautiful recordings. But that part of the market is growing ever smaller. And even as far as listening rooms, at one time the big chain stores used to have little listening rooms where you could hear the stuff. You can't even get a demo anymore. Everything's just on shelves. And the only thing you can actually get a demo of these days, outside of an independent local dealer, and even they're phasing back on that, is TV sets, and they're never adjusted properly in these big box stores. So you never know actually what you're seeing because they're all misadjusted. So it's become a whole new world, and it drives me crazy trying to keep up with it when, for example, we have two competing DVD system, high-definition DVD systems and recorders that are supposed to come on the market either late this year or early next year. We have this constantly moving deadline for the end of analog television, which now is, I guess, scheduled for 2008. And it's a big argument whether the government's going to actually give people a subsidy or a tax rebate for buying a converter box. As a consumer, you go in the, and it used to be things were not obsolete for a couple of years. Now you go in the store today and buy something and it's obsolete in 4 months. Before we take these calls, I want to say one thing. Don't buy a TV set right now unless it has a digital tuner. If it doesn't have a digital tuner, don't buy it. Because right now the law says that I think sets over 36 inches or whatever have to have digital tuners. And next year that's going to have to be sets over 27 inch have digital tuners. But let me pose an example. I have a, I've written this in my column. I have an old Sony black and white. I think it has a 10 or 11 inch screen I bought when I was in college here at U of I. That's many years ago. And I've been wanting to replace it with a nice little LCD TV of the same or slightly larger size so I can haul it around the house and watch it in the kitchen and wherever. Yet you cannot buy a set under 20 inches that has a digital tuner. Now, in 2 years, a digital tuner is going to be mandatory because the analog TV is going to go away. Well, what's the use of having a portable TV when you have to carry a separate box around with it? That's your digital tuner. It's not going to be a card that you can slide in the TV at this point. Maybe in a few years they'll have that. And it's not the price. Yeah, the digital tuner is going to add $150. That's not the issue. In fact, what's the use of a portable that we have to have a separate outboard tuner? It doesn't make sense. And yet the industry is not providing digital tuners in these sets. Say, well, they want to keep the price down so they can sell a $500 LCD TV. But what's the use when you're still going to have to buy an adapter for it in 2 years? I'm gonna get off the soapbox now, and we can answer some of these questions.
Okay. In case you weren't sure, Rich says, don't buy a television that does not have a digital tuner.
That's okay. What Rich said, yeah.
Now, if you have other questions, and we have several people here ready to go, I know he will be happy to talk with you. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We have our first caller in line is someone listening this morning in Paxton on our line 4. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a question about camcorders. My present format is an analog. It's broken, and I talked to the Sony people, and they say that I need to send it to someplace in Connecticut for about $200 minimum, and then I'd have to pay mailing and so on. So I'm trying to decide whether it's worth it to, since it's an old format, switch to a newer format. There's so many formats, so many things out there, I'm confused.
And so is everyone else, so don't feel bad. There's one major issue with your problem is that if you don't repair this camcorder, how are you going to play back
right.
the tapes you've made on it?
Right, that's a huge issue. Right now they sit in a box and we haven't been able to watch them. I'm anxious to document activities in my children's lives, and that time is speeding away. So I'm very perplexed.
Well, at this point, depending on what your budget is and how you can handle this, I would take your old tapes to a commercial processor and have them transfer the old tapes to DVD.
Okay.
And throw the tapes away.
Okay.
And then I would go out for only about $400 and
okay.
buy a digital camcorder.
Okay.
Now, you have a choice. At $400, the choice is basically a tape cassette, mini DV it's called.
Okay.
And that should remain current for the next 3 to 4 years.
Okay.
However, if you spend some more money, you can get a camcorder that records directly to a DVD.
Okay.
Then that might be a little more enduring, because DVD will be around longer than these mini DV tapes. And also you can then play it on your set-top DVD player.
Okay.
So if the camcorder goes south, you can still play your recordings.
Okay. Is there any problem with the DVD format scratching? Because sometimes scratches happen on DVDs, and then the image is lost.
Right. You can, in fact, scratch it. However, DVDs tend to be a little more robust and scratch-resistant than CDs
okay.
because they have a thicker plastic layer, and they don't have that thin lacquer layer. Both sides are the same, so they're protected on both sides, whereas CDs are only protected on one side.
Okay.
So, yes, you can scratch them. Yes, you can make them unviewable, but that's no worse than having a tape jam.
Right.
If the machine eats the tape, you're out of luck.
Okay.
So I think you're still further ahead with DVDs. Except it's more expensive. I think then you have to spend like $750 to get a camcorder that records onto a DVD.
Okay.
Some are even recording now onto memory cards, which is phenomenal, except you don't have a lot of recording time. I think it's like 10 minutes per card at this point, but that'll be increasing.
Okay.
So I would replace your camcorder with a new – the quality of the new digital camcorders, even the inexpensive ones, are so much better than the previous analog models that I highly recommend it. I bought a little $500 JVC a couple of years last year, and incredible quality pictures.
Cool.
And I would stick with, you know, try to stick with some of the main brands, certainly JVC and Sony. Hitachi makes a pretty good one. And just actually compare them at the store if you can, and make some recordings and see what they look like, and go from there. But I don't think it's worth repairing your existing unit if you can afford to have the existing tapes transferred, which is not a cheap proposition, but there are a lot of companies that do it, I think, like Finish Point here in Champaign
yeah.
does it and other companies. It's probably worth it to have them transferred to DVD, and then you can always watch them anytime without a camcorder.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. Mm-hmm. Just a quick question here, Rich. I remember early on in the CD era, people were asking questions about the longevity of the CD. And people were saying, well, we're not quite sure how long they'll last or if they will last. And I think I have some now that are pretty old, and they seem to be okay. Is there still that kind of question about for audio CDs and then also for DVDs, how long they're going to be good for?
Factory produced, that is stamped CDs, if they were produced properly under good quality control, may last 100 years. There's no guarantee. I have some as well that are going on 30 years old, and mm-hmm. there's no deterioration. I have some also that have stopped playing. But if they were not manufactured properly, if oxygen got into the silver layer and started to oxidize it, then they stopped playing. I have some old-fashioned laser discs that were made in 1980 that won't play. Although I got rid of my player now, before I got rid of the player, they wouldn't play. DVDs are supposed to last even slightly longer than CDs because the way they're constructed is slightly different, although it's the same principle, but they're a little more robust. The ones you record yourselves, the jury is still out on those. They say the gold ones will last 100 years. The regular ones may last between 25 and 50. Again, if you store them in a fairly climate-controlled situation where they don't have temperature extremes and high humidity, I don't see any reason why a CD or DVD wouldn't last at least 50 years and possibly longer. We just don't know. They haven't been around long enough. But if you go back, WFMT has tapes made in 1953, and yes, they still play, but they are so fragile that after you play them once, you want to transfer them to another medium because they may completely crumble, the old acetate tape base. And then the more recent polyester has a lubrication problem, and they'd have to be baked in an oven before they'll play. And then they go back to being unplayable. So every medium has had this problem. And, of course, yes, a pristine LP from 1953 sounds the same as if you never played it, it'll sound perfect today as it did in 53, but the second time you play it, it won't. So every medium has its problem. Every kind of media has this issue.
Rich Warren is our guest. He writes about consumer electronics in a regular column in the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. He's also contributed to national publications like Sound and Vision and is here occasionally. And we talk about consumer electronics. And the lines, again, here are false here, so we'll get right back to it for people who have questions. Going next to Bloomington, Illinois, and line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of buying a CD changer. I took a look in the store. They had one from RCA for $90. They had one from Onkyo for $200. Is the one from Onkyo really twice as good?
No, but my experience with some RCA products is, first of all, RCA doesn't make anything themselves. It's all contracted out. And they're usually made to fit a price point. So they tell some manufacturer in China, make us a $90 CD player, and that's what you get, or a CD changer.
Yeah.
Onkyo, because it's an audio brand and they can command a higher price, does. So basically, you're paying $200 and getting a $150 player. But I would say it's probably going to be better than the RCA. I can assure you it's not twice as good. You probably won't hear much sound difference. It's just the mechanical construction that the difference will occur because the chipsets are all pretty similar. So I can't really advise you except to say that, yeah, the RCA is a bargain, but it's not probably something that will last a long time.
I'm planning on playing CDs that I've made myself. Does that make a difference?
It shouldn't, because all models made in the past 5 years are now tuned. The laser is tuned to be able to play CDs, CDRs, and CDRWs, where that wasn't true 10 years ago. So there shouldn't be a major difference. But if I were you, I'd take it to the store, take one of your CDs to the store, and play it on the prospective units just to make sure. It should play as any commercially produced CD plays, and if it doesn't, then you certainly don't want that unit. But there shouldn't be a problem.
Fine. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. I'll go next to a caller in Champaign. Line two. Hello.
Hi. Interesting comment, please, on speech recognition. Nowadays, if you call long-distance information, the computer says, please say or spell the name of the party you want. It seems to be easier just to punch it out on the tone on the phone. And also, what happened to all the free one-box type accounts where you had voicemail and free fax and email? And anytime soon will they be allow you to listen to your party instead of just calling another number? Okay.
I think that's more appropriate for Greg Klein, the computer guy who does the afternoon magazine show. I don't cover that area. Voice recognition still isn't perfect. there are still a lot of problems. Everybody's using it, whether you call the airlines or the power company or whatever, you have to speak and say. And I agree, it's easier to punch in numbers than to say them. But some of this software now only recognizes voice recognition. And if you're talking the wrong angle into the mouthpiece, an N becomes an F, and it's just very strange. But it's not my my bailiwick to talk about that generally. So,
all right. Well, next time Greg is on, or Celeste does the computers and you on once a month, always on a Thursday. So maybe the caller might want to watch for that show when it comes up, and get one of the computer guys. Otherwise, here pretty much we're concentrating on consumer audio and video. So again, if you have questions about, you think about buying a television set, a CD player, a DVD. We've also, I know over the years we've been doing this, we probably have gotten more camcorder questions as we did earlier, and I know Rich has some experience dealing with those things. So that's kind of what we're set up to do here this morning with Rich. And if we can help you out, I'm sure he will do his best. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Go up tier two to Chicago next, line three. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. Rich, I keep hearing about two questions, and I'll make them quick. I keep hearing about this Internet 2. What is it, and why isn't it available to the general public?
Well, again, that's out of my field. I'm dealing with audio video, but Internet 2 is a new ultra-high-speed Internet that right now I think connects mostly universities and research institutions. Like,
well,
the
only reason I heard about it is because they were downloading movies at record speed, and the movie companies weren't too happy.
Right, because students being at universities can get their hands on this high-speed Internet, and it will come to all of us eventually, but of course you'll need broadband to begin with to even realize any of its potential.
Well, now, they were talking about downloading a two-hour movie in 4 or 5 minutes. It just seems to be pretty fast.
No, it can be done. The future is unlimited, and that's why copyright holders, intellectual property holders, are terrified out of their wits, because anything from the Encyclopedia Britannica to Ben-Hur can be downloaded in a couple of minutes. And so that's making a lot of people who own intellectual property very nervous. And I don't want to go into that area because it's not entirely my place to say. Right now, the general public is losing the war because there are things we should be able to download that we're not going to be able to that are either in public domain or where we could make arrangements to make sure that the intellectual property owners are compensated fairly.
Okay, but just one more question, then I'll let you go.
Okay.
I hear them talking about the satellite radio. And if you can listen to the things over the Internet, why buy the radio?
Well, because you still have to pay the same amount to listen over the Internet.
Right.
The satellite radio companies will let you listen over the Internet if you pay the subscription fee.
So they will.
Yeah, well, one of them gives you a little taste. You can hear two or three or four channels of Sirius on the Internet as a kind of come on, and then if you want the whole package, you got to pay for it.
Yeah, I guess you can't listen to baseball games like you used to over the
Nope, you got to pay Major League Baseball a fee to listen to baseball games on the Internet.
Yeah, $9.95 or $19.95 or whatever. Anyway, I don't like baseball that well, so I didn't do it. But I heard DirecTV the other day talk about eventually being able to run 1,500 channels. I don't see how they're going to be able to do that.
Well, in fact, that's between all these satellite services and what's coming with the Internet, there's a technology called WiMAX, which is a kind of Wi-Fi on steroids. And it's going to allow you to drive in your car or to have a portable and hear 5,000 channels, basically. It will tune anything that's available on the World Wide Web.
Well, what are they going to charge for that?
Well, there's no business model for it at this time. A lot of it may still be free or low subscription fees. I mean,
can you imagine if they get 1,500 channels, if they charge $1 a channel? No one's going to pay that.
Well, we're in a brave new world here, and you know, people 20 years ago would have looked at what we have now and been aghast at all the things we pay for now that we never paid for in 1980. I mean, everybody has a cell phone. Everybody has an Internet connection. Or at least everybody wants to have an Internet connection. All these things we pay for, I just went to the site I used to get my weather forecast from on the Internet, and now it wants me to pay for that weather forecast
yeah.
or otherwise be completely spammed to death with spam and ads. And fortunately, the National Weather Service site is still free because my taxes pay for that. But
I wanted to talk to the station. Now, when Ed Kieser does the weather, can you get that on the Internet?
Yes, you can listen
on
to
our website.
WILL, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, can you see what he's saying?
There are some. If you go, have you visited our website?
No.
If you go there, there's a weather place on there that does have it. They do the forecast every day, and it does have some maps there. There's some radar on there, some other things. So you can go take a look at what is there. There is some stuff that's there, and it certainly is free.
Okay, thank you, Rich. Thank you.
Sure thing. We're almost at our midpoint here, talking with Rich Warren. He's host of the Midnight Special and here on WILL and WFMT, and also is a columnist with the News Gazette newspaper and writes a regular column on consumer electronics, audio, video kind of issues mostly. And every once in a while, he's around the program, and that's what we talk about. And if you are confused and if you are trying to sort your way through it, and he right at the beginning of the program admitted he's just as confused, and he's been doing this for a long time. Questions are welcome, and I know he'll try to help. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Eureka, line number 4. Hello.
Hi. Thank you that you admit you're as confused maybe as the rest of us, but maybe on a higher level. Two short questions and a longer one. You mentioned digital tuning. It's my understanding that a new TV that doesn't have digital tuning will still get cable TV, is that right?
Right, with the cable box, yes. That is the cable. It will not get digital cable without the digital cable box.
But it'll get regular cable, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And we'll see how long regular cable continues. This is getting very political. There's economic issues as well as technical ones. Right now, you'll still be getting analog cable, so that'll just be fine. But at some point, even they're going to change over, and then you're going to either have a digital, you have to have a digital cable box of some sort.
Have most of our, my mom just bought a Panasonic. Has that, would that have digital tuning in it?
I have no idea. It's model by model, and also the kind of connectors the set has in the back now. They've changed from a DVI connector to an HDMI connector, and that's phasing a lot of people because it changes the whole way you interconnect all these components. Mm-hmm. And it's really not being very consumer friendly. Of course, they say the HDMI connector is great because it has audio as well as video, so it's one cable solution to all your problems. It also has copy protection built into it so they can regulate what goes through it, which the DVI cable does not have. Mm-hmm. So I feel sorry for people like your mother because they don't tell you these things in the stores. The salespeople don't know a lot, and I can't blame them for that because they can't keep up with it. And the store managers really don't know what they're talking about half the time. I'm talking about the big box store. Some of the specialty dealers do know what's happening and can give you better explanations. Mm-hmm. But it's very hard to keep up with this constant change of which box fits in which connector. And I'm kind of outraged by it because some of them are improvements, but some of them are being done just for political or economic reasons and not necessarily for the consumer's benefit.
Would you have any idea how long the VHS tapes' lifespan is if you store them in a, as you say, a proper place with temperature, reasonable temperatures and not high humidity?
They can be 50 years. I've read recommendations that every couple of years you should take the tape out and rewind and fast forward it and then put it away again. Or play it and put it away again so that the lubricant, all those little spindles are lubricated, and you want to keep a lubricant distributed on those little guideposts and spindles and stuff. Because
mm-hmm.
once those freeze up, then the tape's going to jam.
Okay.
So the tape itself will last, but the question is whether all the mechanism inside will jam and become stiff.
Okay. My final question is about DVD-Rs. Would you say Panasonic is about as good as any? And I guess I've heard the recommendation you should always get like a dual one that will help you transfer VHS to DVDs.
Well, it sure makes it easier if it's all in one machine because then you just push one button and away you go. And as far as quality, I don't think any company is better than Panasonic as far as actually build quality. As far as video quality and things like that, they're competitive with most other major manufacturers, Toshiba, Sony, et cetera. Uh-huh. But I certainly have a lot of respect for Panasonic. They know how to make a good product, and I've seen their factories, and they are very responsive to quality control.
And on the format, they have the DVD-R, what, plus and minus?
Yeah, now most machines can play either. I guess the DVD plus R is, well, the plus and minus R, they're equal. Now, it's the RW that becomes a little trickier, and apparently DVD plus RW is a little more universal than DVD plus minus or hyphen RW.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets kind of confusing, but now most machines can play either format, and many of them can record on at least two of the formats.
Uh-huh.
So it depends which brand of discs you buy and how you want to record. I was just reading an article about that, and the differences are melting away.
Is there anything you should get at least the plus and the minus, and or do most of them have the plus and the minus in the RW?
No. I think like Sony has only plus, and Pioneer has only hyphen, and Panasonic includes its proprietary, more or less proprietary DVD RAM, which is useful for some things, but it's not a format that's being accepted by everybody else.
Uh-huh.
So it gets kind of confusing.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
All right, very good. Let's continue. Next is Urbana Line 1. Hello.
Listening to all this about and over multiple programs about copying things to the new format and how do you save your home movies and such, I keep thinking to myself, who has time for all this? Maybe we should live in the moment more and try to document our lives a little less, maybe. It says the genealogist who really appreciates finding the documentation. But anyway, it just seems like a major hassle. But my question is, I have a CD changer, a Sony CD changer, that after we did some major construction work in our house, decided to start skipping on some of the CDs. And the CDs play fine in the CDs that skip play fine in the Bose CD player we have. But I've tried vacuuming the CD holder places, and I've tried running a cleaner disc through it, but it still happens. So I'm wondering, you can't take things to get them cleaned or fixed, and we bought a reasonably good changer at the time. I'm just wondering whether I should risk taking it apart myself, and if I screw it up, just buy a new one, or what I should do. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I would go out to a photography shop or wherever they sell it and get one of those cans of compressed air.
Uh-huh.
And then I would take the lid off, and I would sort of blast away with the compressed air and try to get all the dust and lint and whatever else is in there out of the unit and see if that makes a difference. It also possibly could have received a hard knock or something during your construction process and thrown something out of alignment, in which case it would have to be professionally repaired. But since the unit's not working well as it is, you're not going to lose much, and you're probably not going to electrocute yourself by taking the lid off if you know where to keep your fingers away from anything that's, you know, with power supply.
Well, I could unplug it, but sometimes there are, what are they called?
Capacitors, but don't worry about that in a CD changer. That's barely enough to light a flashlight, so you wouldn't worry about that. It's TV sets are another story. Don't ever take the back off your TV because you will end up electrocuting yourself because it stores huge amounts of power. But a CD player is not a big deal if it's unplugged.
Okay.
And I would just take the compressed air and try to blow away any debris you might see in the unit and clean it out that way and see if that helps. Otherwise, unfortunately, you're probably going to have to buy a new unit.
Okay. Thanks, Ben.
And I also want to say I sort of agree with her about this. You know, everybody is so busy. I will admit I do not own an iPod or an MP3 player. Why do I not own an iPod? I have a record library of thousands of CDs. I don't have time to sit around and convert my CDs to MP3s or whatever the format happens to be for iPod, AAC, whatever. And I just don't have time. I have a friend that says, oh, it's so exciting. I got an iPod and I'm putting all my recordings on it and I'll have 10,000 hours. And I think, yeah, it takes 10,000 hours to make all the, even if you rip them, I mean, it's going to be, you know, a lot faster. But I tend to agree that you get so wrapped up in trying to do all this stuff that Where do you have time to do anything else?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
I mean, it's true. It's a lovely device because it puts a lot of music into a very small package. You slip it into your pocket and, you know, that's great. But it does take the time for you to, whatever procedure you have to go through, to load the music into the little package. So at some point you may ask yourself, is this really worth all the time and trouble that I'm taking?
And you need to be very careful to make a backup on your computer of what's in your iPod or MP3 player. Because I was just reading an article, I think it's in PC Magazine this month, a new issue just came out. They're telling you how to replace the battery in an iPod, the expensive one. Well, you know, we used to have this joke, but you don't have to be a brain surgeon. Well, you do have to be a brain surgeon. Because Apple has no intention of letting you open this unit up. To get it apart, to totally disassemble it, to get to the battery is basically brain surgery. I was looking at this article, and I'm pretty good at that kind of stuff, and I'm not sure I'd want to attempt it.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is if you return it to Apple to have the battery replaced, they charge you $100 for a $30 battery, And they don't guarantee they're going to send back the same player. So anything you had on the hard drive in there is history.
They're not even guaranteed they'll send you your player
back?
That's
right. They will substitute whatever player they feel necessary with fresh batteries. So you would have to reload it from your PC to put all your files back in the iPod, which, I mean, will only take a couple of hours, but if you have a large library. But I find it very upsetting that they make it so you cannot replace a battery, which is only good for a year or two, these rechargeable batteries. After you recharge them 300 to 500 times, they're history. And, of course, they won't give you, you know, lithium rechargeables last longer. But so I'm just perplexed that, you know, this person, this listener has the right idea. I mean, maybe we're spending too much time on some of this stuff.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll go on here and talk next with someone in Chicago, line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Does anybody make or sell a quality AM, FM radio with a cassette recorder? Or is that a thing of the past?
I'm afraid that's basically a thing of the past. There are quality AM/FM radios. In fact, you can buy one for $50. The General Electric Super Tuner 3, I think it's called, is a big AM/FM table, not quite table. It looks like a portable, basically. In fact, our former chief engineer Ed West used to recommend them all the time. He was right. It's a terrific radio. It's now made in China, but it still sounds great. But it has no cassette player that I know of. And as far as sound quality, some of the Bose Wave radio sounds really good, but doesn't have a cassette unit.
How about Crane?
I've heard good things about them, but I've had no personal experience.
On the cassette record, when they go back, what is there, a belt in there that breaks?
Well, often it can be a belt or one of the nylon cogs loses its teeth. Depending how the thing is constructed originally, most of them do use belts, and the belts age like a rubber band, and eventually they slip or they break or they become brittle. And it's so strange because you lose let's say you have a $200 cassette deck, and it operates using a $1 belt, and the belt breaks, you can't find a replacement anymore. They don't make the replacement belts for these units. The government only requires replacement parts for like 5 or 7 years, and after that, it's up to the company. Some companies are better than others. But in this day and age, everything's now made to be disposed of, which is terrible for our landfills and not very good for consumers.
I have a neighbor with a touch lamp. When they turn that on, my radio buzzes. Is that the normal?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's they generate a lot of interference and hash. We have any kind of light dimmer does that. You'd be amazed how bad. There are certain light switch dimmers that you can buy cheap at the supply stores. And I actually had one of those dimmers generate so much radio frequency interference, what we call RF hash, that it blew a circuit in a computer relay box I had upstairs.
Oh, my gosh.
That's how noisy they are.
This should be outlawed.
There were some regulations at one time that the FCC put on, but I don't think those are enforced any longer. So there's a lot of those things in the market. There's so much radio frequency interference buzzing around your house that it's lucky you can get AM reception these days. It seems like so many things cause problems, from the ceiling fan lights, which have the dimmers, and fluorescent light fixtures. And it's just unbelievable the amount of stuff out there that's generating interference. And so, yeah, I'm afraid that that touch unit is pretty normal.
Yeah, and you don't know what your neighbor next door has got operating unless you go in there and ask him.
Exactly. And it's funny because 20 years ago, the FCC was really concerned with this kind of stuff and really enforced the rules and stuff. And now the FCC is more concerned about getting those broadcasters to give up those analog frequencies and allowing people, the media conglomerates, to merge. And they don't care about the technical stuff like they used to. So it's really sad.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Next caller is in Bloomington, Illinois, line number 4. Hello.
Hi. My husband and I are looking for a TV. Our old standard TV sort of died, and we're looking at a digital TV. We've been looking at 60-inch Sony Vegas, and with all the technological terms, we're just sort of at a loss as to, is that a good decision? Is the LCD projection better than the DLP or the new JVC's DILAs? We're sort of stuck. Could you please help us?
I'll try. First of all, the Sony Vega is a good set. I mean, you can't go wrong with the set. It certainly is a first-rate TV. It's in the upper echelon of TVs. As far as the different technologies, what most consumers aren't told is whether you're talking about the digital light projection, DLP, or LCD projection. Unlike a cathode ray tube, which we used to call picture tubes, you can't get true black. That is, when the picture is true black, these only go down to dark gray. It's just inherent in the system. Now, with LCDs, they've gotten pretty sophisticated, and top quality like the Sony has probably the best LCD panels. With the DLP, there's three or four different variants of quality in the DLP system. The JVC, basically, by the way, is a variant of that. It's their own proprietary tweak on it, which actually works quite well. But there's whether you have one color, a color wheel, and how many different sources. It gets so confusing that I have trouble keeping track of which set uses which system because there are these different grades. So you basically have to use your eyes. And the trouble is with most of these big stores, they don't have dark rooms in which to truly put three sets side by side and see which one has the best picture. By the way, I don't think you're going to really notice the lack of true black in most cases. It's something that video purists really desire, but most people won't notice it in watching a movie. But the things like grayscale on LCDs, it's very complicated. Now, the Sony Vega, I have a friend who has one. I'm very impressed with the picture. But you just have to use your eyes. As far as quality, you're not going to go wrong with either Sony or JVC. They're both top-notch brands, and they know how to make a TV set. And 60 inches is a great size. I envy you because that's, you're really going to get the thrills of watching movies. And I would hope that it has the HDMI input because apparently when they come out with high-definition DVDs, that's the interconnect they're going to use for these new players. But as far as I can't really tell you which one to get without lining them up side by side, I would suggest you could go online and try to find reviews from magazines like Sound and Vision, which have very objective and perceptive reviews by qualified people, and get some idea of which ones they recommend. I know they've had shootouts in the past year of several different large screen brands and their recommendations. I also know they had a comparison of plasma versus LCD, and they liked plasma better, for example, for direct view. It wasn't projection because there's no plasma projection. But it's a very complex thing, and I urge you to at least try to shop somewhere where you can get a side-by-side comparison and, you know, sort of see what looks best to you. But, again, you won't go wrong with the Sony Vega. It's a pretty good set.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate your help. It's sort of, we were just so confused, and it's nice to have someone of your knowledge give us some major input. Thank you so much.
Sure. Well, thanks for the call. We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Rich Warren. He writes a regular column on consumer electronics for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, has also contributed to a number of different national publications, including Sound and Vision, and as well hosts the Midnight Special here on WILL, which we air on Saturdays. So if you're interested in, if you've never heard that show, well, I don't know what's wrong with you, but if you haven't, you can tune in and you can hear what it's all about. And again, we'll take as many questions as we can as time permits. Here, if you have questions about TVs, DVDs, VCRs, what have you, 333-WILL or 9455, toll free 800-222-WILL. Next caller is in, let me see here, in Muhammad, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just wanted to make two comments. One I wanted to make last time, which was on, and there wasn't enough time. But first, what I want to say is, in terms of TVs, I have a 108-inch DLP front projector, and I have a 43-inch plasma Pioneer, and I also have an 84-inch CRT front projector. So I've had a lot of these systems. And I think this issue of true black is sort of very misleading. It's something that people who care about color temperatures, they're more interested in technicalities of their equipment than they are in what they see. If you get your room sufficiently dark and you get a good enough quality, and certainly Sony 60 inches is very good quality TV, you'll get fine black levels. The one thing I do want to add and make a mention of, because they do have a plasma also, is that I recommend now to everybody who can set up a front projector system, avoid plasma, because I wanted to hook up my PowerBook into my plasma and use it, but I can't get the full coverage of the screen. And even if I get the full coverage of a screen, the computer screen is basically static. In other words, plasma TVs have a very severe danger of having burn-in, not just from video games, but from almost anything. And you don't have that with LCDs, and they've tried all kinds of ways of dealing with burn-in, and frankly, it's better to avoid that issue. The second thing I wanted to say is in regard to actually another question that was asked last time and this time, I just wanted to mention two products. There's a product by Griffin called Radio Shark, which you plug into your computer, and with the software, it plays on a PC or a Mac, you can set it to record any show, any radio show that you want on a time schedule. It will record it as an MP3 file, which you can then put on your iPod Shuffle or whatever it is you're listening to. And that's a very nice device that just came out. And another one, which has actually been out for a year, is called an Audio TiVo. I don't know the real name of it, but it's a small recorder. And again, you can program it to record certain shows at certain times. The only drawback of that device is as you drive around town and you find WILL, because that's the show that they always want to record, will fade in and out, so you might have a reception problem. And I know someone who wanted to buy one because they wanted to record Rush Limbaugh for Rush Hour Traffic, and they sent me this really good review. And so I wrote back and I said, I bought it, I tried it, I ran it over with my car. It was so complicated in those days. It only costs about $100. The Radio Shark only costs $60, but there's no reason you cannot record audio in the same way that you record video now. Those devices are out, and it's only a matter of whether you can get good reception. So I just wanted to make the audience aware of that. Okay, I'll just hang up. Thank
you. Well, thank you. Well, that is, you know, over the years, that is one of those questions we've gotten over and over again. People understand, well, I can set my VCR, I can set it up to record a television show. Is there some way I can do that to set up my radio to record a radio program if I can't be there to listen to?
Right, but there are also tuner cards you can get for your PC that go right in the PC, come with the software that make it into a recorder. There's all kinds of ways to do that. There's even software out there which is quasi-legal that can record anything off the web into your computer, whether you're supposed to record it or not. Also, the gentleman was correct that the ultimate video quality is front projection TV, but it's very cumbersome and expensive to get the best, and it's not something that the average family would tend to use. But if you're into the ultimate, that is the way to go. As far as plasma displays, according to Al Griffin and David Renata at Sound and Vision, manufacturers have pretty much solved the worst of the burn-in problems, that they're not seeing burn-in anymore. They've actually left images on the screen for 15, 20, 30 minutes and not seeing any burn-in on the plasma, that the manufacturers have seemed to have found a way to deal with that. It was an early issue, but it's being corrected, and that's why they seem to prefer plasma, because it's a little bit brighter and it handles motion better than LCD, but I'm not going to argue about it. It's just that it seems that things are getting better with plasma. So, plasma will also, like a cathode ray tube, eventually burn out.
Okay.
So,
all right. Well, again, we have a couple more questions, so we'll try to get at least one more, if not both. Southern Illinois is next, and Noah, my apologies. Spring Bay, Illinois is next, line three. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Well, I've got to say this. I was listening to your program last Saturday, I think, and I'm a very casual listener. But it did strike me that whoever put that together put a lot of time and effort into it, and I appreciate it. Here's my question. I've been looking for a GE Super Tuner 3 radio for my mother for about 5 years, and I can't find them. I'm in the Peoria area, and I go to Circuit City, Best Buy, Sears. Do you have any source or any place you know where these things still are? And I'll get off and listen to your answer offline. Thank you.
Okay. Gosh, I haven't shopped for one recently. I thought I saw one somewhere, and I can't remember where it was. But the best bet, if you have access to a computer, to the World Wide Web, is to go to Google and just type in GE Super Tuner 3 in the Google search bar. And I bet you're going to find someplace on the web selling those units, and probably fairly inexpensively. They were never pricey units to begin with. I think we're trying to check that out now. That's generally when I want to find something. I usually just, as they say, the new verb, Google it. And it comes up. So I don't know. Are we having any luck with this?
Yes. I came up with a number of eBay,
Shopzilla, GE Super Radio at shopping.com, and that's just in my first six hits. So I would imagine that there should be a number of places where online you could get it. I know here in the past, I think that when, as you say, Ed West used to recommend it, that some of the big box stores here in our area, they sold them. But
Apple iPods are more profitable now, so.
Well, that may well be. So it should be possible, and so you can try the web, and good luck. Let's go at least one more caller here. We have a caller on line number one, and that's in Urbana.
Hi.
Yes.
I have a Bose Wave Radio CD player, and my ability to use the controls has gradually declined over time. It's the unit. It's not me. I wanted to set the clock or adjust the volume on the unit, and it didn't respond. I eventually succeeded in using the remote, but even that now has declined. So I don't know what the problem is. I thought I'd call and ask you. And then secondly, could you recommend a Bose radio repair specialist? I have been unlucky locally. Thanks.
How old is the unit?
Oh, it's about 4 years old.
Okay. It's probably out of warranty, but the only people who can repair Bose are Bose, because the Wave radio is a sealed unit, because to get the kind of bass response, they have to glue everything together inside. Mm-hmm. And so to repair it, even though the circuit boards are separate from the audio chambers that have the waveguides, et cetera, what you should do is call the Bose number. I think it's 800-444-BOSE.
Mm-hmm.
And tell them you have a repair problem and ask if you could speak to somebody about getting a Wave radio repaired. And they will probably even send you a carton if you need it. But they're the only ones that really can repair that unit. They've made sure of that. And so mm-hmm. that's the only way you're going to get it fixed.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. And again, so we keep going here. We got next someone, line number two in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. I was intrigued by your comments about the GE radio. And my efforts to locate it turned up the name of the Super Radio, not the Super Tuner. And that's spelled SUPERADIO.
And do they do that all as one word, or is it as two words?
All as one word.
Okay.
Only one R. And the model number appears to be 7-2887.
Okay. Well, we're pretty sure that the product is still available. I think the earlier caller, the question was he'd looked around and had just in where he lived, he was not finding anybody who had it. But as I said, I've just put into my web browser here GE Super Radio and come up with a number of hits. So that may be the best way now, if someone can't find it at a local retailer, to try to find some online source, because it looks like there are plenty of people here who are offering it for sale.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much. We're coming down to the point here. We have a couple of minutes left. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, and I'm listening to this conversation we've been having about television sets. To the extent that you could answer a question like this, if you think about, you know, say 5 years from now, what kind of televisions are most people going to be watching? Maybe even if we get to the point where we're going to have replaced a significant amount of the existing sets, for when we get to the point where it's going to be digital, that either people are going to have to get rid of a lot of old sets, or they're going to have some kind of converter box. But in terms of all of these kinds of formats, particularly LCDs and plasmas, and people who want big screens with big dramatic, you know, they want to have home theater, they want to watch DVDs, they want to get big dramatic pictures. What kind of televisions do you think people are going to be watching?
Well, there are two new technologies coming out next year to make things even more confusing.
Oh, good.
Some of them are already starting to appear on small screen units. And there's one, I can't remember the name of it now, it has some complex name, but it's a combination of sort of a cathode ray tube, but it's only 2 inches thick. And it provides all the beauty of a conventional cathode ray tube, but none of the drawbacks. And that's something that they're working on. I can't remember the name of it, but Toshiba's pushing it pretty heavily. And I saw the demonstration of it at a Consumer Electronics Show, and it was very impressive. What are we going to be watching? Well, on the low end, it'll still be cathode ray tubes, because they're so cheap now. They're being made in China, and it's an old technology, and they're still plentiful. Ultimately, I think the low end will be all LCD on smaller screen sizes, other than cathode ray tubes for the people who want the cheapest. But in small screen sizes, I say under 27 inches, everything will be LCD. over 27 inches, we're still going to be arguing about these various other technologies. Each one has a niche. Each one has a certain benefit compared to the others. I wouldn't even predict which one we're absolutely going to be watching in 5 to 10 years, other than I think most things will be turning out in widescreen. The aspect ratio will be the 16:9 widescreen. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's going to be all over the map, depending on price and your environment. And as the earlier caller said, sure, front projection is just fantastic. But again, it's cumbersome for most people. It's not easy to install because, remember, if you hang the projector on the ceiling, the tuner has to be with it too. So you need wiring put in to make sure everything, you know, goes with that. I think we're in for this incredibly exciting but mystifying, confusing ride in home entertainment. And with computer, the internet expanding like this, Internet 2 he referred to, that is going to come to pass in 5 to 10 years. So we're going to have incredibly high speed. So when you want to watch a movie, you're not going to go to the rental store. You're not even going to Netflix or anything. You know, you're just going to press a button, and it's going to come to you on the internet and show on your big display. And so everything is going to be part of a computer. We're basically now everything I read about, all these audio components, everything is ultimately going to be tied in, networked, part of a computer, so that you may have a server in one room which is serving your bedroom and your basement and your kid's room, and it's going to be tied to the internet. And so you decide you're going to watch a certain movie that night. You just type in what you want to watch, and the bill comes on your Visa card, and it's a brave new world.
All right. Well, if we're lucky, Rich will still be here, and we'll keep talking about it. For the moment, we'll say thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Rich Warren, look for his column in the News Gazette and here on WILL AM on Saturday afternoons at 2 o'clock, the Midnight Special.
That's right. Folk music and farce, show tunes and satire, madness and escape.
Thank you. The broadcast made possible by a grant from Horine's Pianos Plus, your Steinway piano showroom in Bloomington. Horine's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Programming also made possible by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois on the web, americanclassifieds.com. That's it for us. We want you to stay tuned, though. Coming up next is the Afternoon Magazine. The host for the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, the story of Ruth Harkness, a New York socialite, the widow of an adventurer who decided she would take up her husband's quest to bring a live panda out of China. Our guest this afternoon in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, Vicki Crook. She's the author of The Lady and the Panda. Let's take a look now at prices on the Chicago Board of Trade. July wheat trading at 321.5, down 5.5. September 329.5, down 5.75. July corn 224.75, down 2. September 233.25, down 2. December 244.5, down 2.25. And March corn 251.75, down 2. July beans 685, that down 3. August 690, unchanged. November 7 even, down 1.5. July meal 214.20, down 40. July oil 24.83, up 6.